Between client meetings, managing your business, and everyday tasks, who has time to worry about website hosting? With Kinsta's Managed WordPress hosting, you don't have to. They handle the technical stuff, delivering lightning-fast load times, enterprise-grade security, and 24/7, 365 human-only support. Simply switching to Kinsta can make your site up to 200% faster. Kinsta's custom dashboard makes managing sites easy, with powerful features designed to save you time and effort. Plus, their free expert-led migrations ensure a smooth transition. Ready to see why Kinsta is trusted by thousands of businesses? Get your first month free at kinsta.com. That's KINSTA.com. Kinsta, simply better hosting.
One of the hardest parts of getting older is feeling like something's off in your body, but not knowing exactly what. It's not just aging. It's often your hormones, too. When they fall out of balance, everything feels off. But here's the good news. This doesn't have to be the story of your next chapter. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is an herbal formula made with science-backed ingredients designed to fine-tune your hormones by balancing estrogen, testosterone, progesterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol. It helps with common issues such as hot flashes, poor sleep, low energy, bloating, and more. With over 40,000 reviews and a bottle sold every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. A survey found 86% of women lost weight, 77% saw an improved mood, and 100% felt like themselves again. Start your next chapter feeling balanced and in control. For a limited time, get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com with code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
That's a hard thing to like express in a story, much less a comic book. And yet I think it's one of the things that Saga does brilliantly as a form of resistance against the forever war fascist kingdoms that are just fighting and fighting and fighting and fighting. And all that Alana and Marco are trying to do is live. And that becomes a radical act of resistance.
Welcome to Holy Ghostie. That's not how you say it. Welcome to Holy Ghosting. I'm your host, Meg Weber, and this season on Holy Ghosting, we are exploring how each of us can contribute to a healthier, more connected self and society. And right now we're talking about it through acts of resistance. Today we're going to go in a little bit of a different direction than you might have been expecting, because today I want to talk about resistance through art. So I have invited Andrea Gilroy. She is the owner of Books with Pictures, an independent, locally operated comic shop, and she has a PhD in comparative literature from the University of Oregon. And specifically to this conversation, her dissertation focused on comics history and the way that comics represent identity. And so if you haven't figured it out yet, today I'm going to be talking to Andrea about resistance through art, through comics. So welcome, Andrea.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here. And yeah, I'm pumped to talk about comics.
Me too. I was not an early adopter of comics. I, you know, was more pushed towards like the Christian literature. I really got into the Frank Peretti kind of like, I don't know, not gore.
Darkness. Sure.
But
yeah.
Yes, it was definitely like a horror genre, I would say, of Christian literature. And my real, I think my only connection to Christian approved comics was the Chick Track. Do you remember these? The Chick Track, the comic, the little handheld.
I found one in the wild the other day.
Did you?
And I think I've healed enough that I found it funny.
I was gonna say, did you get saved again, or was this a trauma moment? Like, do we need to take a breath?
No, it wasn't even one of the good ones. It was one of the boring ones.
Just hell. You're going to hell. Just
you're going to hell. Exciting. It wasn't like a good Dark Dungeons or I'm trying to remember the name about the one. It's something like the Hell Cookie or something that's about the Catholic communion.
Yikes.
Amazing.
I mean, look, if Christianity taught me anything, it's that horror, just as a genre, is very welcomed. You know, we have the Passion of the Christ. We've got the crosses everywhere. But no, my introduction into comics was through my husband. He grew up as a superhero comic reader. And that's kind of where my understanding of comics landed at the ripe old age of 20 when I got married. And so, you know, he opened my eyes to Brian Michael Bendis, Alan Moore.
Yeah. There's a trip.
I think he tossed me into that a little early.
It's always a little early. It's always a little, you're always a little too early to jump into Alan Moore. I don't think anybody's ever entirely ready for it.
Yeah, I'm gonna let listeners know to just like pause. You know, if you take recommendations from us today, don't start with Alan Moore.
I'm not gonna say that.
But no, my first jump into it was Fables. And I think Andy definitely gave me kind of the classic, like, here's something that a girl might like story. For those of you that don't know, Fables kind of takes all those fairy tale characters, the Cinderella, the Prince Charming, the Big Bad Wolf, and puts them into a world where they all live together in a magical fantasy place in New York City. And my favorite part of it is that Prince Charming himself, from Cinderella's story, Sleeping Beauty's story, it's all one guy. And the moment that I realized that Prince Charming was just this one player, I was like, this is genius. Bill Watterson, you've got me. Not Bill Watterson. What am I saying?
Very different person.
Very different.
Frankly. Bill Willingham.
Thank you.
There's W's and multiple syllables, so it's not too far.
Bill Willingham with Fables.
But an entirely different world in many ways.
But, you know, comics were this, like, juvenile thing. They were something for kids. You know, you'd see the Archie comics at the checkout. But it wasn't something that I ever considered would go beyond kind of just, like, that world. But in talking to you, it seems like maybe I'm not the only one. Maybe there are other listeners out there who are going like, yeah, comics just aren't for me. Andrea has a few things to say about that.
I do. I have some feelings on the, you know, it's not an accident. Our store motto is comics are for everyone. And I mean that in the sense of everyone has a place in the world of comics. You know, there certainly are, I'm sure we'll get into it in more detail, sort of gatekeepy kind of aspects of a lot of comics fandom. And that sucks and is not inherent to comics. Comics are should be open to everyone, but also that, like, there is comics for everyone. It is, as the sort of more common refrain is, it's a medium, not a genre. It is, I think, more closely associated in our minds with particular kinds of genres, but it is just a form of storytelling. I think, like, I use TV as a comparison a lot because I think maybe if you talk to somebody in, like, the 70s about TV and TV as an art form, there might have been the sense of, like Leave It to Beaver and, like, maybe a variety show. Like, what are you talking about? How could it be an art form? And you're like, well, that doesn't define what a television show can be. That's just what a lot of television shows you know are. And likewise, comics, there is, just because of the, you know, the way people have experienced or accessed this world a little bit, there's sort of monolithically superheroes or funny pages. And historically, those are some of the oldest genres in this particular medium, but far, far from the only. And especially, I'd say in the last, it's always been a much more complex and multifaceted form of communication. There are a lot of reasons for that due to methods of distribution and Hays Code-like strictures on content that sort of purposely shifted some of those conversations. But pretty much since its beginning, it's been a form that can tell almost any kind of story. And in the past, let's get my timelines right, because 2000 wasn't 10 years ago anymore.
Oh my gosh.
But in the past, you know, 30 to 40 years, especially, there's been a real embrace of the wide spectrum of kind of stories that comics can tell. And I think it's only really continued to accelerate in the last 20, 15 years that a lot more folks are kind of, if there is a wider understanding that there's more that you can do. And then with that, people are doing more. More people are doing more because more people sort of are aware of those possibilities.
Yeah, getting to experience different voices has been really fun for me in comics. I feel like, so let's talk about the difference between comics and graphic novels. Mm-hmm. Is there any difference, or is it just?
Yes and no. So on the one hand, graphic novels is a marketing term, really. Like, it sounds better than comics to a lot of people. And so a lot of people sort of glom onto that. I don't read comics. I read graphic novels.
So adult. It's just,
it's yes. Very adult. I did get a kid to say that to me for the first time not too long ago. And it made me laugh really hard. But that's because right now, like, graphic novels are a huge genre in children's publishing. So I was like, I'm used to, like, the parents telling me they don't read comics, they read graphic novels. I'm not used to, like, a 7-year-old scoffing at me and telling me that. When, if we're sort of really drilling down, a graphic novel would refer to something that is a long form comics story published as a whole, as opposed to something that is, like, originally comes out periodically and then gets collected. And it would be fictional as opposed to something like Persepolis or Fun Home, which people will call graphic novels, but those are actually graphic memoirs or graphic nonfiction. So on the one hand, yes, there is a thing that is a graphic novel and it is very specific and it refers to a specific thing. The term gets used a lot more broadly, I think, because people are hesitant to or afraid to use comics as a term. When I was in, you know, comic studies in the academic side, like we just called the form comics for the most part. Some people would get, you know, well, it's sequential art or like graphic narrative or something, and it's comics.
It's a lot of nerddom. I can appreciate it.
But yeah, so when I use the term comics, I refer to the medium as a whole. And when most people hear comics, they probably think like a floppy or a single issue or the kind of thing you would pick up on a spinner rack. And so that's, I think, why some of these other terms developed to sort of separate from that.
But I do love this idea that comics are this in-between that was like kind of this untouchable thing, at least for me growing up. I was a girl, so mm-hmm. that was the first one. You know, they were predominantly for boys, for kids. You know, they were really misogynistic. Like the women represented were nothing that I was going to ever attain from a body perspective. Certainly not. And they were almost like outside of the Barbie, even in this mm-hmm. fantasy way that just felt so unattainable. Mm-hmm. So I didn't identify. I didn't have anybody to really be like, oh, there's me, or, you know, I could have this trait just like this character does.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think that that's fair. So I mentioned the long kind of history of things, and there's this sort of tension that I feel sometimes I'm talking about the historical realities of comics as a form, and being like, on the one hand, there have been women and people of color and queer people making comics since the beginning of comics and doing all kinds of things. On the other hand, like a large majority of it was shifted and twisted by market forces and like morality police forces to tell certain kinds of stories. And then we get the kind of direct market, which is why, like, I think when people think of comics, they think of comic book stores. And I think comic book stores have been around forever. Comic book stores have only been around since the 70s, like late 70s, early 80s. Comics used to be sold before that in drugstores and, you know, newspaper booths and that kind of thing. They're not particularly marketable.
Yeah.
A surprise, I didn't get into this for money. And so, like, there were distribution issues and people, like, you could get one issue and then the next issue wouldn't come regularly and that kind of thing. So they spin off to make this sort of more direct store. And then what that does is it really narrows who reads comics on the whole, because you have to go into a specialty store to find your comic, whereas it used to be like anybody could wander in and pick something up off. And that becomes kind of this weird self-fulfilling prophecy, right? Mm. Because, all right, well, we're going to make books for the people who are going to come into the store, and the people who are going to come into the store are a certain kind of people, and so the books are going to become more for them. And surprise, like, for other reasons, like, this had turned into a lot of adventure and superhero comics and a lot of the romance and, like, teen girl comics that were actually huge in the 40s and 50s get kind of dropped because they're not the people coming in. And you can kind of see how it spirals and becomes this really distilled thing that kind of pushes people out. So on the one hand, yeah, for a very long time, comics was a pretty unwelcoming place to a lot of people. There were definitely places within it, like, you know, the X-Men, for example, and some of these other places where fans who aren't that kind of stereotypical nerdy white boy would find an in. But also the market did kind of not care about anybody else finding that way in, because they were doing just that. That changes as we get to, like, the Vertigo stuff. Some of the Vertigo and some of the Image stuff in that late 90s, early 2000s, we begin to see that shifting. And surprise, surprise, that's like a lot of women or AFAB people our age are like, yeah, that was when I came back into comics, is like the Vertigo books and these interesting weird books and like the early Image books and these kinds of things. And it's like, yeah, because they broke out a little bit. It's crazy. It's a weird thing that happens when you make comics for the people. Other people read them sometimes.
Yeah. And it's so interesting, too, talking about how it didn't switch from supermarket newspaper places into bookstores. It was like the bookstore really did not originally observe comics as a form that they were going to like welcome in, right? And so this idea of a separate shop really had to happen if it was going to continue and going to find life. But it really did make it for such a narrow audience. And certainly we were not people who were included in that audience for a long time. But, you know, I think we saw a shift happen. I certainly know that when MTV came into my life, it completely shifted just art for me. It took art to a place where music and visual art and graphic design all kind of like merged together into this one beautiful thing. Comics were still this outlier, though. Mm-hmm. They were an alternative place for people. Mm-hmm. I don't think that, you know, you were getting kind of your everyday bookshop person walking into a comic book store. It was a lot of the outsider kids, the skater kids, the kids who just kind of wanted to be different in their visual and external appearance. And so I think comics, as you mentioned, like X-Men, really gave kind of space for that, opened the opportunity for there to be characters that did not just fall within the binary. And this is something, as I mentioned at the top, that you did your dissertation on. The idea that comics represent identity in ways that are not strictly tied to the binary. Where did that kind of shift happen? And who are some of the authors or artists that you point to for that?
Oh, what a fun question that I'll probably, speaking of tangents earlier. I've got some bunny runs to go down. My sincere belief is that comics have always been a kind of overly rich form of exploring and representing the world, because, you know, perhaps the defining characteristic, I can get into a definition fight that's probably not worth it, but the big thing that separates comics from other forms of media is that you are combining the still image with verbal expression. So you have words, you have images. They're not moving images, which is kind of important, but you get to sort of draw and pull on the powers and the weaknesses of both of those forms in really fascinating ways. So sometimes it will be just like an image and a caption that just says what's in the image. Okay. But you have lots of moments where the image will be, you know, sort of sarcastic, that the text is kind of a sarcastic play, or it says something and something very obviously different is happening in the image, or vice versa, or there's more details in the image than there are in the caption, or all of these kinds of ways that you can kind of build up on that. But also, when we use these different forms of art to express ourselves, we're relying on an entirely different set of tools. Like, we use images or visual art to express ourselves in certain ways, to express certain aspects of what we're thinking and what we're seeing and what we're experiencing, and to communicate that to people who are then going to experience that visually. And you have that whole gamut from something like, you know, photorealistic art that is attempting to recreate what you are literally seeing, to expressionist or abstract art that is trying to create a visual around something that like defies words or images. And words can do the same thing, right? We can use really poetic language that like evokes different kinds of emotions in the different words we choose. We can be, you know, very specific and descriptive, or we can be metaphorical and poetic. And like I said, comics just sort of takes both of those and gets to play in both of those sandboxes at the same time. And ultimately, I think, comes out as more than the sum of its parts, because you are getting all of this different information all the time. And when it comes to representing either a form of identity or a method of existence, comics can use all of these different tools in ways that I think in our own experience, like, identity is a contradictory existence, right? Like, there's the parts of us that we admit to, there's the parts of us that we're performing, there's the parts of us that we feel on the inside and don't express. There's, you know, the purposeful, like, constructions that we have to express visually or externally, and all of the things we think inside. And because comics has access to both visual and verbal cues, it can play with all of that in a way that just one or the other can't. You know, you can both express a thought, which you can do in written with the written word by writing down the thought, and visually share what you're seeing, even if that's not real. I think that's one of the things that can sometimes be powerful about autobiographical comics, because you're not only getting the written voice of the person, but also the drawing that they see of themselves, which can be sometimes really abstract or cartoony or weird. Or like, if you know a person and you see them draw them yourself and you're like, well, your insecurities are really coming out there. Like, that's not what you actually look like. I can see you have a lot of feelings about the size of your ears.
Yeah.
And we learn things about an individual in that way. In the same way, even characters that aren't like real people, the way that the artist is choosing to create that kind of character on the page and build that character draws on those same tools. And so as we're looking at this character or image to kind of project and work through this narrative with, that's what gets reflected back to us as well. So yeah, I mean, I think it's been that way since the beginning. I will often talk about one of my favorite early, got a tattoo of it, in fact, comic strips. It's called Crazy Cat with two Ks. And this is, that was just a daily comic strip and then started in 1919, went until the creator, George Herrmann, died in the late 40s. And it's really just kind of a gag a day strip at its core. There's a mouse and a cat, and the cat loves the mouse. The mouse hates the cat. The cat is always wanting attention from the mouse. The mouse throws a brick at the cat. The cat sees it as love, and ad nauseum repetitions of that. But when you pull out, like, Herrmann was doing things like very purposefully. The cat changes gender signifiers. So sometimes they'll call crazy a he, sometimes they'll call crazy a she. Sometimes Herrmann will refer to crazy as it. And it's not like he's just playing fast and loose, because like Ignatz Mouse is always he. And Herrmann himself, we've, you know, there was long suspected, but recently in the past about 10 years verified that like his family were Creoles of color from New Orleans who moved west. And when they did, changed their paperwork so that they could pass as white. So he's, you know, this artist in the 19 teens passing as white, doing things like working on strips about the Jack Johnson, Jim Jeffries fight, which is the fight of the century between the black boxer and the white boxer. And so also like the cat is black and the mouse is white. And so what's happening there? So on the one hand, very surface level, funny, silly, poetic language. On the other hand, all of these things are happening underneath. And that's, you know, 10 years before Superman.
Yeah.
So
this idea of storytelling through visual art and through language and through the subtext and what's unspoken, what's seen from the artist. And I love these connections, too, between artists and writers. I know that there are quite a lot of people who do both. And, you know, you get to see and hear and experience their full vision and story. But the way that collaboration happens within this community, I think, is also just such a brilliant and beautiful thing to witness. And it's one of those spaces where collaborative art and world building, I think, is inspiring. It's inspiring in a way that it can bring us into places that we never even could comprehend would exist. And it opens our minds to ideas and things that, you know, we maybe weren't raised to be allowed to know about. And yet that space is not one that is just for one kind of person or one kind of creator. The collaboration between artist and writer, between the whole team, colorists and people doing the, I'm going to call it the wrong thing, but lettering.
Yeah, no, that's okay. Right. Called lettering, letterists. Yeah.
Yes, it's each person bringing into something in the story, and it's not just haphazard. Mm-hmm. The way that this collaboration happens through the medium is a really, really beautiful thing. One of my favorites right now is Saga, the collaboration. Yeah. That is, Saga is one of the most beautiful and mind-blowing things to me. For those that don't know, this is Fiona Staples and Brian K. Vaughan. I'm just going to read the back of the book. That Saga is a sweeping tale of one young family fighting to find their place in the universe. When two soldiers from opposite sides of a never-ending galactic war fall in love, they risk everything to bring a fragile new life into a dangerous old world. Fantasy and science fiction are wed like never before. In this sexy, subversive, ongoing epic. It's a story that I think really takes into consideration a lot of these things that we've been talking about today with identity and being outside of norm. Mm-hmm. And it's a story that kind of marries together this creative team in a way that has definitely, I don't know, it blew my little Christian brain open when I first started to read it. Just as a fair warning to anyone, if you do want to go pick this up, there is sexual assault, there is drug addiction, there is war, there is violence.
There's not this sexual assault. There's like nice sexy times too.
That's true.
But explicit.
Yes, that's true. There are also really hot, sexy times.
Yeah.
that are very consensual and that also offer a whole new look into a different world that I didn't know existed either. So, I mean, comics are also a really safe place to kind of have exposure to ideas and things that are not what we would consider the norm or or what we were raised to believe in. And I think that's, it's not just mind-blowing, but it's like liberating.
Yeah. I mean, I think that that's true of storytelling in general. You know, even some of the Christian stuff that I read growing up, had stuff that was different than the church that I believed in kind of thing, right? Or the church that I followed, that I was part of. And it just opened, anytime and something just kind of opens up that crack and lets it get through. And storytelling, I think, is so powerful for that. And because I think, you know, for all the reasons I jabbered on about for a long time, I think comics is such a powerful and intense form of storytelling. It's particularly good at that. It's particularly good at finding those cracks and opening them up and creating those spaces for you to think and explore and experience worlds that you aren't expecting, points of view that you aren't expecting, depictions of people that you aren't expecting. Saga is one of my least favorite questions that I get asked is like, well, I've heard about the Saga. What's it about? Well, everything, kind
of. Yes.
And it is. It's a beautiful work of collaboration. I'm a fan of both Fiona Staples and Brian Vaughn individually. Their work together on this book is something entirely special. And it is, I think, you know, often an example of some of the best stuff that comics can do in the ways in which we're jumping in and out of people's different, you know, most of it's sort of, we could have Hazel as a narrator, but she kind of fades in and out as different parts of the story require us to focus on particular narratives. And, you know, we don't know yet where her positioning is, except that she's an adult at that point that she's narrating. So how she knows some of this stuff, we don't know. If it's even real, we don't know, but it is just, I think, a profound story that is simultaneously, like, absolutely nothing new. Mm. Like, I could bring every single, like, trope or, you know, it's Romeo and Juliet, it's Star Wars, it's Firefly, we got Hamlet thrown in there, like, just pick a Shakespeare play and throw it in there, it's in there. And yet, in the way that it rearranges those pieces, becomes something entirely unique and new. And it's just it's an undeniably brilliant piece of comics. It's just sort of like, what a lucky time. How lucky to be alive when this particular book is coming out and to get to experience it as it comes out.
Yeah, as the story unfolds, there was a 4-year hiatus that happened during lockdown pandemic times, kind of pushed everything in everyone's world for a spin. But they have restarted. Mm-hmm. There are new issues. I just recently went into Books with Pictures and got the most recent issues. So I'm all caught up on the saga. No spoilers for anybody here today. But it's a beautiful story, like you're saying, hard to describe. One of family, but also one of war, one of opposing sides. One that really takes into consideration that family is who we make it to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That really, and that can shift and change throughout the narrator Hazel's life. We see different people coming in and out that are considered like a mother, like a sibling, like a grandparent to her, and that really all end up making such massive impacts on her life. I kind of found myself observing this story kind of right alongside with Hazel, just like holding her hand and being like, where are we going on this adventure? Like, oh my gosh. And like you said, there are some things that we're like, oh my, I hope she didn't really know about that when she was 7. But really, it's an opportunity, one, to be in your own world, but in a safe place, to know that this is a place where you can just have different ideas. Like, maybe have exposure to something that maybe you thought was evil before. Yeah. But when you really come down to it, it's just stories of people, of just human existence, whether they have a TV screen robot head or horns, you know, it doesn't matter, that these characters really are just showing the humanity of everything. But they also are challenging, not only to the other characters within the story, but challenging to me as a reader. And really, this concept of freeing your mind through literature, through art. We're seeing more and more books being banned at schools and public libraries. That's why these independent shops are so valuable, so important. And, you know, we know that censorship keeps us locked away. It stops us from having dangerous thoughts, I think, is something that you said to me the other day. And I loved that. I want us to have more dangerous thoughts.
Yeah. I think necessarily the story of Saga changes constantly. But one of the early points is experiencing this piece of literature that is kind of about nothing. And that shifting your worldview, because they're reading heists novels that just appear to be about mostly like people sitting on the couch and talking. But this is like radically changes Alana and Marco's life, and some other folks too. And the way in which Saga mirrors that sometimes, like there are times when you're reading it, less so I think if you're sitting back and reading whole big chunks of it, but especially if you're reading it as it comes out, you're like, this is kind of messy. They're just wandering around. Nothing is really happening. Like, what's going on? And then you remember like, yeah, that's kind of the point, isn't it?
Yeah. It's kind of life, right?
Part of the point of it is that, like, on the one hand, you know, the word saga, of course, implies this giant world spanning, life spanning kind of story. And it certainly is that. It's clearly they're crossing universes and planets and star-crossed lovers and all this kind of stuff. And on the other hand, it really is just about like the messy everyday lives of these people in these insane circumstances. And, you know, for reasons like, I really felt that recently of just the like, I'm just trying to like, you know, I don't have a kid, but like feeling Alana and Marco that on the one hand, they're worried constantly about, you know, assassins breaking down their door because they're breaking all of these taboos. And on the other hand, like really excited to find a washing machine with laundry detergent because that means they can actually do their laundry. And that is like, we never know the story that we're in. We never, until we're past it, right? Until we're on the other side, we can't look back and make sense. It's only in the turning around and examining what has happened that we can make any sense of how we experience it. We can be living in the most interesting, extreme times and have some sense that, like, stuff is happening. This is going to be an important part of my life story someday. But we don't know. We never know until we're on the other side of it. That's a hard thing to like express in a story, much less a comic book. And yet I think it's one of the things that Saga does brilliantly is balance that kind of sense of the daily, the mundane, the small, the thoughtless, like the things that you do without thinking. Those are simultaneously little things that only affect you and also have part of this much, much broader web. And in Saga, at least posits it as a form of resistance against the forever war fascist kingdoms that are just fighting and fighting and fighting and fighting, and all that Alana and Marco are trying to do is live, and that becomes a radical act of resistance.
I love this story because of not just the ways that in their daily life they're doing these small acts of resistance, but really their entire survival is an act of resistance. Their daughter is an act of resistance. Just her being an anomaly. This is not giving anything away. It's on the cover of the book, but there is, it's on the cover of the first issue. Yeah. But they do have a baby. The horns and the wings are in an epic, like, warring time, and their two sides don't get along. They fall in love and she gets pregnant, and it's not a messiah story. It's not a, like, you know, they're just two people really who fall in love and who want to live their life together. The resistance of just living, I think, is such a beautiful part of this story, and of Hazel, their daughter's life. Just her existence in the world is an act of resistance. And what we're able to see and how we're able to see that reflected just in what we're experiencing right now, it's given me pause. It's helped me to catch my breath, to remember that this is a story of love, ultimately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that the more that we can embrace and find ways of absorbing art in these different forms to resist, I'm all here for it. Saga is just one of the ones that has made an impact on my life. And there are so many more that we could talk about, but I want to be respectful of everybody's time today. And maybe we'll have to have another conversation because, as you know, this is not the only thing that I have an opinion about when it comes to resistance, when it comes to art, when it comes to kicking down the patriarchy. It's something that we know is kind of an everyday thing. So I would love to challenge everyone this week to create an act of resistance for yourself through art, whether it's going out and participating in an art form, whether you are going to support a local artist or someone in your community that is helping to tell stories that aren't being told. It's something that we can all do as a small act of resistance this week. And if you're really up for it, I highly encourage you to go and check out your local bookstore, your local comic bookstore.
Right.
There are these are some of the most inclusive and welcoming environments. I know at the start of this conversation, we talked about kind of the elitism, the nerddom, the fandom that can happen that can really make people feel like an outsider to this world. But Andrea, you have created a space, not just in your shop, but also online through your Discord community, where you have just welcomed all people, all ages, inclusive of every kind of nerddom, I would say, that falls within the role-playing comics community. And it's a beautiful thing because we are all artists and we all are creative and we can show up and resist in all of those different ways.
I'll say thank you for that. It is on purpose. I'm working at it. It's talking with my husband and my business partner and my team, and it's why we're all here. It's why we're doing what we're doing, is because it's a way that we can provide this kind of space. And I'm not going to pretend that every space you find is like that. It's not, but you can find, they do exist. They're worth supporting, I hope.
Absolutely.
That feels sort of self-serving in that case, but also like there are I'm only here doing this because of the people who did it before me, who made spaces where I felt safe and seen. And even just, it didn't have to be one of the stories I tell when people ask, like, what did you get into this? When I was in Ann Arbor, before I moved out here for grad school, our shop was a shop called The Vault of Midnight. And we used to go in all the time. They're great. We'd talk about books. It'd be fun. And before I left, I was like, give me a stack of 5 books you think I need to read. And he gave me the stack and I took them all and I read them all and they're great. And then we were moved literally across the country. And but when we would go back to visit my family or friends, we would always go back in. But it was like once a year, right? So 2 or 3 years later, we walk in. Curtis is the guy behind the desk and he's like, oh, I haven't seen you guys in ages. Did you read this? This seems like it would totally be a you guys thing. And I was like, I don't care if that's just a sales technique or whatnot. Like, I felt connected. And that made me want to do that for other people. Because, like, when you expect that, and you deserve to expect that.
Yeah.
I think everyone deserves to expect that kind of feeling. Maybe not everywhere you go every day, but you should have places where you go and you feel seen and part of a community. It doesn't make sense to live without it. That means making your own space where you can do that for other people. Like, it's pretty fun, cool.
I was a kid who really liked to frequent my local Christian bookstore as a teenager.
Yeah.
It was a place that I felt like it was safe. They had Christian punk music, which,
yeah,
you know.
Some mix picks in there for you?
That's right. That's right. You know it. And they hired local people. They hired people that I knew. So it seemed like a place where you could go as a teenager. Everything was safe. I want that to be the comic shop for the next generation. I want my kid and the next group of kids to know that there are safe places like Books with Pictures, where you're going to not just find an inclusive community, but you're going to find opportunities to engage with literature that is unique unto itself. It's unlike anything. If you haven't picked up a comic book, if you think it's not for you, go see Andrea. There's romance. There's Western themes. It's not just sci-fi and superheroes, y'all. There are so many things that you can go and read stories about, and different types of people and relationships, and really, like, I mean, my mind is blown every time I walk into the shop because, one, yes, there's always something that I'm going to be recommended. Get to know your local shop owners and people that work there. They are nerds for a reason because they love it and they want to talk about it. So engage with them. Ask questions. If you're unsure, if you're a kid especially and you're unsure, you don't know where to start or what to read, it's very overwhelming. These are the nerds for you. Like, come and find people in your local shop and look for someplace that is inclusive. It makes a difference. It makes a difference to all of us, not just to kids. Comics are for everyone.
That's right.
Andrea, thank you so much for joining me today. I would love to have you back on again. Let's talk about more ways to resist through art, through comics, through having conversation, and you know what? Just ripping out the binary, I think.
Right.
I think that's, comics are great for that. So yeah. I would highly encourage everybody, go to bookshop. You can see books with pictures. You can order directly from them online. Or if you're in Oregon, come and check them out in Eugene at the 5th Street Market. And if you can't get into the shop, you can always join the community online at their Discord. It's open for everybody. So go to their website, Books with Pictures in Eugene, and check them out. Andrea, thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Meg. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Ghosties. If you want to catch up with us in between shows, you can find us on TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube. We'll see you next week.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip, when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.